From newsounds.org, welcome to another Soundcheck podcast, our series of live in-studio performances, streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. I'm John Schaefer. In 2008, Laura Gibson became the first musician ever to be invited to do a Tiny Desk concert at NPR. She's been a longtime fixture on the Portland, Oregon music scene, but she moved here to New York for a couple of years to study fiction writing. Her new album, her fifth, is called Goners, and it is her first album to be released since she got her MFA. Laura Gibson has brought her band into the studio to play some of the songs for us on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, and we'll begin with Slow Joke Grin.
The diamond hands and the quick wit sentences, I have no plans. You're the only home I ever wanted. But now five floors above, the siren moans. Is a songbird with a sickle claw. You with the slow joke grin, watch the town torn down and built again in the pause between the riddle and the punchline. Held the kite tethered tight to your chest. But I was never one to second guess or draw a line between love and fear of loneliness. Sawdust hand, broken trigger on the starting gun. Oh, I can't find another way to say I want you. I ought to pull this hook from my cheek, but I'll keep on shouting from the fire escape. I'll keep shouting from a white van window, from a bridge, from a field, from a ferry in the harbor, from the soul dark wound in the mountain. I want you, I want you, I want you, I want you. Thank you.
That is Laura Gibson and her band live here in our studio in Lower Manhattan, and another edition of the Soundcheck podcast from newsounds.org. Slow Joke Grin is from the album Goners. Laura, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, it's so nice to be here.
Let me introduce the rest of the band. Lauren Jacobson on backing vocals, keyboards. We'll hear her playing violin. We've got Jay Foote currently switching from the acoustic stand-up bass to the electric bass guitar. And Ryan Dabrowski behind our drum kit, and you, Laura, playing guitar and keyboards and, of course, singing. The sample that Lauren was just playing, that kind of zithery-sounding thing, explain what that is.
Yeah, that's an instrument called a marxophone, and the sample is recorded when I made the record. I ended up borrowing it. Actually belongs to my boyfriend, and his mom had gotten it at a antique store somewhere in.
I mean, they're all antiques.
Yeah, it's very very old, and so there was one song I thought it would sound cool on, and then it sounds really nice doubled with a piano, and then I just kept adding it to things over and over. The thing is, it looks so cool and it would look amazing on stage, but it would take about 10 minutes to retune. It's only in one key, so I have to go through and add the sharps and flats, and so the sample does not look as antique-y cool, but but it works and is in tune.
You know, I'm not sure I know what a marxophone looks like.
It looks sort of like an auto harp, but there's these sort of metal prongs that are also keys that play as though it were a keyboard.
And that's what gives it that
And it's got like a floppy end to the metal prongs that kind of vibrates.
And gives you those multiple hits on the note as opposed to a little. Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah. I have it on my keyboard too.
There are marxophones everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there are these moments of real intimacy in the record, and this song is a good example of how those moments then kind of blossom into something almost orchestral.
Yeah.
And it seems like that. There are numerous plays of light and dark on this record, but that play of intimacy and the bigger sound is also a key element, it seems, in Goners.
Yeah, I care a lot about vulnerability in what I do. I think that's something that I have to offer that is a part of what makes me excited about writing songs and to kind of bear myself in new ways. But I really love orchestration, and I think of the songs a little bit like each one is almost like a little dream and has its own logic within it. And I wanted to make the orchestration feel not necessarily like here comes a band, but sort of like you're entering a new room within a dream, that it would still be intimate, but the world around the sort of intimate voice would swell up and shift.
Well, and in the title track, Goners, there's a brass band. I mean, you do get that. Yeah. Well, now here comes a band sound.
That's true.
Goners also has this line where you say, if we're already goners, why wait any longer for something to crack open? Is that a reference to Leonard Cohen?
No, actually. I mean, there's...
Yeah, I mean...
Leonard Cohen is a really big influence, so there's certainly many nods.
Okay. But his famous line, you know, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
I tend to use, both in song and in life, I use the word cracked open a few times on the record. It's my best way of describing opening up and letting go of things, to be cracked open. And I wrote this song at sort of a strange point. I began right after the Trump administration started in February of 2017. Beginning of February, I did an artist residency in Everglades National Park, which was so dreamy and surreal and wonderful. And it was such a strange time to kind of be hiding away in nature, because I wanted to be out. And so I wrote that. It was one of the first lines I wrote, perhaps the first line that I wrote, because there is sort of this sense of, you know, when something, a big traumatic thing happens or a death happens, there's this sort of letting go, this cracking open that happens where we kind of let the masks fall for a moment. And I felt that quite a bit at that moment in time. And a lot of the record is about grief and about the ways we nurture or fail to nurture each other. And It felt like the right way to describe those sort of connections, yeah. I guess.
So is that why on your website you refer to this album as your perhaps your strangest, darkest record yet?
Yeah, I don't. It's funny. I didn't mean to really go dark. I tend to write sort of thoughtful songs, and I like to think that they're hopeful songs at the same time. It felt like a dark time. I was also in this very, I began in this very strange, surreal place of the Everglades, and then a lot of the songs were written back in Oregon in the mountains, which is an equally beautiful, surreal place. And I think writing about really tough subject matter like grief, I found that the art that moves me the most tends to dwell in the surreal, not even because it's hard to look directly at or to speak directly of such a kind of enormous subject as grief, but I almost feel there's a way of capturing the truth of those sort of experiences because they are sort of surreal. You are sort of dwelling in strange territory by nature of feeling.
And how often have people who've lost someone close to them, you know, that you feel like you're in a bad dream?
Yeah.
You
know, I think dreams are such a part of it and a part of healing and moving forward too, both the bad dreams and good dreams. So I wanted to sort of write to that, and it gave me a way in, and it felt like I could sort of inch up to the thing I wanted to say better within this sort of dreamscape surreal world.
Well, I mean, that's one of the great things about songs is they're not reportage, you know,
yeah.
It's not journalism. You don't have to actually talk straight on about the thing it's about.
Yeah.
You can come at it from an oblique angle if that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and it's kind of sort of the magical thing about poetry is how much it can do when that normal conversation can't do.
That's why we have art.
Yes.
We're speaking with Laura Gibson. Her record is called Goners, her fifth record, her most recent. And she and the band are playing a set for us. You want to do the song Tenderness?
Yeah, I will switch over to the key.
All right, so.
Hopefully not get tangled.
There are chords everywhere, but Laura Gibson affecting the changeover from guitar to keyboard. The rest of the band is pretty much as you were. And let's hear another live performance here in the studio.
Fearing my body, the skies would open above me. It was a pleasure to meet your pain. In my shadow, you're a model of reason. Don't coddle, don't tease me. Don't wake a swarm of bees beneath me. Do, 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 one. Tenderness, settle down for tenderness. Thank you. tenderness, tenderness. Do you want tenderness? Break a leg for tenderness, walk away for tenderness. Myself into a mountain, became something dark and hungry. Still the creek was muttering your name. Now your face half lit, electronic. You no longer need to speak your sentiment. I no longer perform innocence.
Laura Gibson, the song is called Tenderness. You'll find it on her latest album, the new one called Goners, but a live performance here in this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, our live in-studio series from newsounds.org. Laura, you were talking before about, you know, grief is one of the themes of the album Goners, but there are also several songs that are specifically about a woman's point of view.
Yeah.
Tenderness is one of them. Mm-hmm. We began the session with just a little bit of Domestication, which has this amazing video that, did you co-direct that?
I co-directed it. Yeah, I had the idea, and my friend Alicia Rose, who's this powerhouse woman in Portland, I mentioned it to her, and I was like, I don't know if I can pull this off myself, but I want to direct it. And she said, let's co-direct it. There's 13 women in dresses, and my mom sewed all the dresses.
Really?
So it was a big project, but it was really fun and very satisfying to see it come together.
And it has a definite kind of Handmaid's Tale vibe to it.
Yeah.
You know, again, that idea of a woman's place and, you know, having a place forced upon you as opposed to choosing your own.
Yeah, I wanted to create a sort of speculative world, something like The Handmaid's Tale, and I came across this photo of the FLDS in Utah, this of all the women in pastel dresses, and it's such a striking visual to these women in pastels, and I thought that it would be fun to try and sort of create a world around that.
Well, now, creating worlds is, you know, that's the job of the fiction writer. And you were here in New York for a couple of years getting your MFA.
Yeah.
Did that affect the songwriting process for you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt to spend 2 years thinking about storytelling and language. You know, you can kind of get away with a lot in songwriting. Mm-hmm. And I try not to just get away with a lot with things, but I try to really think about the words I'm crafting and maybe potentially overthink them. But I throw a lot of abstract lines in a song, and it sort of works. But within fiction, you have to ground those abstract things in concrete details. And so I think the thing that I've noticed in my songwriting is I've added a lot more objects objects to it. And this record actually has a lot of strange objects and
a lot of sharp objects.
I know.
A hook,
I don't know.
A claw.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. A sickle. A scythe. I'm not sure why. Why I think I noticed that maybe after a lot of them were already embedded in the songs, and I'm not sure why the sharp objects.
Interesting.
Yeah. Something in my subconscious is sharp and metal.
Yeah. So most songwriters will eventually get asked the question, who are other songwriters that you're interested in or influenced by? For you, who are the fiction writers who've, you know, who drove you to go after your MFA?
Yeah, well, I was really fortunate to study under a writer named Colm McCann, an Irish writer.
Yes,
and
a very fine Irish writer.
Yeah, a very lyrical writer, and that was one of the reasons I came out to New York. Was I applied to the program, and they only let 6 writers in a year, and I thought, there's no way I'll get in, but if I get in, I have to go. And so I got in. So Colm's both a big influence as a teacher, and also his work is quite an influence. Marilyn Robinson is another important influence for me. I just reread her book, Housekeeping, this last summer, which I'd kind of always held as my favorite book, or it was the one that came to mind when people asked what your favorite book is. And it really held up. And it's funny, I read it between my second and third records for the first time. And there's so many things within the way I thought about being a woman and thought about loneliness and being an outcast or fitting in, the idea of fitting in, that I think a lot of thoughts about myself and about the world were born in reading that book. So it was really lovely to read it again sometime later and sort of trace back some of the things that I care about now within songs.
You know, what's interesting is if you're a fiction writer, you can study with a Colin McCann. And if you're a poet, you can go to, you know, workshops with poets. But are there songwriting? I don't think there are songwriting courses. There's not an MFA in songwriting.
Yeah, and I also don't know if I'd want
that was the next question. Can you teach this?
Yeah. I certainly think you can help, you know, songwriters become better. I've gotten to do a few workshops with high school kids, which I really love. Not just because I want to create an army of little songwriters, but also because I think kids that wouldn't normally be into their English classes are often songs are the way they fall in love with words. And when I taught undergrad at Hunter, Intro to Creative Writing, when I was in school there, and I had everybody bring in a song that they liked, and it's a great way to open up, because I think, you know, we're all experts in language. We've been doing it our whole lives, and I think people can find poetry intimidating or literary fiction intimidating, but when you talk about a song, often they realize, you know, it's explain why you like the song, and sometimes they have really good, like, I just like that sick hook in the chorus, but also sometimes it's really, I think, and there's something really intuitive about all writing. You know, sometimes you just like something, or sometimes you write something because it just feels good and it feels right. And same as a listener, sometimes I don't understand a thing, but it just makes this intuitive sense. And so it's really fun to, language is such an incredible tool, and to have young people fall in love with language through song, and then they can take that back into the other realms of learning, I think is a really special thing and a powerful thing.
So now that you have your MFA in writing, have you been writing fiction?
I am slowly chipping away at a few projects. My goal was to make this record this year, and then as soon as I'm done with touring this round, to kind of hide away and work on a few things. So look out for my book in 2028. Maybe that's what I like to say. It'll take me a long time to write the thing I want to write, but man, what a pleasure it is to work on fiction as well.
Laura Gibson is my guest with her band here in the Soundcheck studio. And why don't we wrap up this little set the way the album wraps up?
That sounds great.
With a song called I Don't Want Your Voice to Move Me. So you've moved back to the guitar for this one.
Yeah.
All right. Laura Gibson and the band live on Soundcheck.
On the eve of your departure, I sat beside you on the kitchen floor. You said darkness has no virtue of its own, it's only darkness. What is lost is lost. You were tired of metaphor. Crawled along the ruins, found you up above the timber line, where the mountain stood before us like a bright arrow white, the sun was honeycomb, it turned your white hair gold. I don't want your voice to move me. I don't want to be cracked open. I don't want the knot to loosen in my throat, to place a landmine down a rabbit hole. I'm no pale face saint, I'm like a dog, always barking at a ghost.
I don't want your voice to move me. The closing track from Goners, the fifth and most recent album from my guest Laura Gibson, playing live here in the studio. And boy, it's a great song, and it's different live, obviously, from what it is on the record. But you mentioned the word orchestration before. I mean, you clearly have an ear for arranging things as well.
It's so fun. I love it.
So do you have enough classical training that you can, like, notate the winds at the beginning of the song Marjorie or the brass on the title track?
No, I have very little classical training. So a lot of the string parts, for example, I would have ideas, and I have a lot of very strange voice memos because a lot of the strings are very swoopy. There's a lot of a lot of slides in them. And I did spend some time a few years ago learning viola, and so that helped quite a bit, just thinking about strings. But I have a lot of really funny voice memos on my phone of just me going, like trying to make these parts, and then dictate them to the to the string player, who all of the string parts were played by a woman named Kylene King
on the record.
In Portland. Yeah, I really wanted the sound of this kind of strange sound of three octaves of strings. So it's three tracks on each viola, and then three octaves and two violas and one violin, and it gives it a weird sound that I enjoy.
So all the strings, one person, and all the layers of voice, one person.
I'm the only voice on the on the whole record, and sometimes there's many of me singing together.
Jay and Lauren backing you up on that last song,
doing a great job.
It really was terrific. Laura, great to have you.
Thank you so much, John, and the quartet here
with us in the studio today. Congratulations on Goners.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
to all the low and snowless ones. Ever dark, ever quiet, never barking out loud. I'll be gone before the dawn kicks up. I have no patience left, won't tuck my tongue into my mouth. Take me gently.
That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.